Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
Sean Holsapple went from a W-2 employee to Indianapolis's premier wholesaler and accomplished real estate investor in just 4 short years. He currently handles over 150 residential transactions annually and has a rental portfolio that is always expanding. He's been married for 23 years and has a teenage daughter who is an entrepreneur in training, aren't we all? Sean, welcome.
Hey, Sean.
It's great to have you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we're no stranger to Bigger Pockets. We actually found you in there, so it seems like you you spend a little bit of time in there like us.
Yes, a little bit. It's actually been a really good investment of time.
Good. Mm-hmm. So who are you in the real estate industry? Explain your niche to us and a little bit about what you do. What sparked my interest on LinkedIn is your little sub company that you have that helps Canadians help Canadians buy investment property. I think that's what it is, right?
Yes. How that came to be, I actually spent 5 years in Calgary, Alberta, in Western Canada from 2005 to 2010 up there doing a W-2 type job, and got familiar with that area. And just as I was leaving Canada in 2010, I started getting into real estate a little bit. And so when I came back, a lot of my friends up in Canada was interested in the Indianapolis market. And of course, they couldn't believe that you could buy a house for $60,000.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it every week from our friends too.
Yeah. I went through a process. Actually, my former neighbor up there, we created a little joint venture LLC, and we bought a couple of properties here and went through that process as far as the for cross-border transactions, and kind of figured that out a little bit. And I still help out a few people that they'll find me through whatever means, and help them get the cross-border stuff going.
Great. So, I mean, what's the basic transaction that you do with an investor, whether they're from Canada or from here?
I'm just some boots on the ground for them. So my broker with Keller Williams here in town, but I don't do a whole lot of broker type stuff. So I don't show properties to the public. I work with out of state, out of country investors as a whole is where I really specialize, especially since I actually bought my first rental here in Indy while I was still in Canada. I know what the pain is of doing something remotely and trying to build a team. So I can really connect with people like that really good, and just help them find what they're looking for, tell them where their war zones are and where to stay away from, and all that good stuff.
You know, I'm from Detroit, and my producers told me I never should say war zone on
you know.
But I understand. I'm from Detroit. There's some of that there too.
Right. And even then, with that said, I mean, our quote rough areas instead of that other word here in the Midwest is still fairly safe. I mean, I don't mind driving around through them. I know like some larger cities I've heard that, you know, even during daylight hours, you don't want to be caught there.
Yeah. And you don't want to buy any property there. That's for sure.
No, for sure.
Oh, I got to say this. I hope you don't mind and jump it in. Steven, you got to tell your little snippet about when you moved here to Arizona and like the Scottsdale area, and you made a point to find the worst part of town, and you're like, please, that was funny. Yeah.
So in the early 90s, same situation, W-2 situation, I got a great opportunity to work with a company as their vice president of acquisition for long-term care facilities like nursing homes and assisted living and stuff. So they flew me out here. This is in the early 90s, and I met with the CEO, and we were done with the interview, and I said, look, I'm either going to move here next week and work with you guys, or I'm not, but I'm going to move here, because it's just like, you know, night and day from where I grew up in the Midwest. So I got the job and I moved here. And one of the first things I did was I just was walking around in awe. I thought it was too good to be true. So I asked a bunch of people, where's the worst neighborhood? I really want to drive through it and see. And it's not a bad neighborhood at all compared to some of the stuff that goes on in the Midwest. I mean, there's exactly. I haven't seen boards on the boarded up windows here. I don't think ever, Jill, have you?
Not
like
really.
Anywhere.
No.
Unless really, something's no. being renovated.
Exactly.
Well, that's kind of how it was in Calgary. You know, the locals was like, oh, yeah, the east side is horrible. But you drive through there and like, good grief, I could live here. You
know, it's, right.
And that's the worst part of the whole city. But here in the Midwest, there's some rough areas, of course. But overall, we're in a really strong market and have a lot of activity from out of state and out of country investors here right now.
Yeah, some of my friends and Jill's friends and some combined are from Canada, and it's the same reaction. I love speaking with people who are from Canada who are down here either on a vacation or they're checking out real estate or whatever, and they don't know about the market, and then they come down and they find out that you can buy it, like you said, mm-hmm. a really, really nice house between $80,000 and $150,000.
Right, and when I first started some of that, they're so used to that price that when you tell them 50 grand, and they think that's the down payment.
That's awesome.
And they're like, okay, so that's the down payment. What's the purchase price? I'm like, that is the purchase price. And it actually hurt a little bit because people thought it was a scam.
Oh, yeah.
Thought it was too cheap.
I could spend all show on that. Yeah. You know, if we know what $50,000 buys you in our little niche. five 40-acre properties in northern Arizona. That's free and clear. That's not the down payment either. And and when after they're placed, they generate, I don't know, Joe, what do you think, $1,200? Mm-hmm. Those five would generate $1,200 for about 20 years. And there's nothing to do. You know, that's the whole thing about our little niche. That it's just land. So you just kind of collect the payment and that's it.
Nice.
So what are you working on right now? Anything really interesting?
I just do a lot of wholesale, and we can talk about that real quick. So my wholesale isn't a typical assignment. I typically don't do assignments. Since I'm a broker, I usually just actually close on every transaction and then turn around and either do a double closing, or I'll sit on it for a little bit and possibly do a prehab, go in and kind of clean it up a little bit and then put it back up to my buyer's list. That's the bulk of my work, and that's my active everyday job, I guess, would be that. And then take some of those proceeds to add to my portfolio for the passive, for the long term.
Nice.
And so that keeps me very busy. Since we're in an active market, it's getting harder to find inventory. So the MLS is picked clean, but I still make a few offers on the MLS. I do a lot of HUDs, and I do a lot of auctions. The online auction is my biggest focus right now.
You know, that was my next question. How do you primarily source property? So, and you kind of answered it. You know, we do direct mail and with a huge degree of success. Have you had any experience with that?
Yeah, a little bit. I did the Yale letters, and I was overwhelmed with phone calls my first go around, and really missed out on a lot of opportunities because I was just too busy doing my other stuff, trying to answer the phones and stuff and try to call people back. I did a few of those and had success, but now I kind of help some local bird dogs and other wholesalers to do that part of it, and then they send me the deals, and then I buy it from them, then turn around and sell it to my buyers.
That's great. So you have a bunch of wholesalers kind of feeding you deals.
Right.
That's great. You know, Jill and I do our share of single family residential wholesale transactions also. Mm-hmm. I love not ever going to look at the property for some reason.
Yes.
You know, so you must have, let's talk about that for a second. You must have a lot of, investors that are in a different country even that are kind of trusting you that you're going to rent this thing out and manage it, right?
I usually sell stuff as is. So they already have a team for the rehab possibly, or if they don't, then I can help them with that. Or on occasion, I'll offer them a turnkey, quote unquote, type property without the turnkey price. So I can hand them something as is or something that's ready to go or even something that already has tenants in place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you buy a house for 80 grand. How much can you rent it out for generally?
80 all in here is close to 1,000.
Wow, those are great numbers.
Yeah.
I personally like the 60s ranch in the outskirts of town that you can pick up as is for, under 40. You put 15 into it, and they're rent for 800 all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking 60 all in with an 800 rent. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I mean, our numbers are, we purchase property from between, doing direct mail. We purchase it between, 1,000 and let's say top end four, maybe 5,000 if it's really exceptional. And then we sell it on terms for quite some time, mm-hmm. for between $100 and, $250 a month on the top end. Mm-hmm. And, it just seems to, for whatever reason, that niche stuck with us, and it has stuck with us for 15 years.
Nice.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I kind of do that with about half my portfolio on the rentals. I do lease to own or lease options, and that works out really well here.
Yeah.
What takes up the most of your time, Sean? Because our business model is so darn easy and painless and fun for me. I hear your numbers and I go, oh, that's great. But I'm like, I know there's, because we've done a few flips and things like that and remodels, and oh my gosh, the time it took and the energy it took and the costs. What do you spend the most of your time on?
For me, it's the offers, just making, there's me, of course, full time. My wife works 20, 25 hours, and I guess work is kind of a loose, she's here.
Does work mean eating bonbons in the bathroom?
Yeah. we have a part-time lady that comes in twice a week, and she works 16 hours a week. Then I got a VA in the Philippines that works another 15. But the biggest part of my time is the offers, this overseeing the offers and also making offers myself. With HUD, you have to make offers every day on the same property because the offer gets canceled if it's not accepted. A lot of people don't realize that, so you have to really, we're making 100 to 150 offers a day on HUD, plus another 80 to 100 offers on auction.com every 2 to 3 days.
It must be worth it. So, I mean, give us an example. Can you really underbuy, can you really price something well with HUD?
Yeah. HUD, about 3 years ago, I went to a seminar, a little weekend thing, and one of the things he was doing was offering one-third of the list price. And he's like, I don't care where it's at or what it is. If I can get it a third of the list price, I know I can sell it.
I love that ideology. That's what we run our whole model on, Jill.
Yeah,
exactly.
We can't lose buying a 40-acre property for $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't.
So, yeah, and so for the most part, I don't have really a percentage of the list, but I just go in, I look at it real quick, do a quick comp. I know what I can sell it for as is, so I'll back it out the numbers, then offer my highest and best on the HUD home store, and then just either someone else buys it or we buy it. We keep offering until something happens. And, once in a while, there's those that I'm not too excited about. Condos, especially here, aren't really that big of a thing. And for example, one I spot on HUD, it was listed at 59. ARV was about 80. I offered 18 and they said yes.
Mm.
And wow. And then turn around and put $8,000 into it and sold it for $65,000. That's a flip that that's an extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Really good numbers. I don't really do a whole lot of flips because back to Jill's question, those take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And of course you have to work with contractors, which is a whole nother podcast. So,
it's a whole separate career.
Right.
Yeah, so I try not to do too many flips. I'll do occasional prehab, like I mentioned. And for the most part, I only go look at the property when it gets accepted. And that's about it. And then I take some pictures, put together a little flyer and send it out to my buyer's list and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have, I'm glad you brought that up. That was my next question. How do you, do you have any issues selling property ever?
Very seldom. I mean, once in a while, I'll get one that I set on for 60 days, but usually within, 1 to 3 weeks, it's usually gone, which is hopefully within that 30-day window from when I get the offer accepted till I actually close on it.
Mm-hmm. You know what that tells me? That you're buying it right.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I have to buy way under what my buyers will buy. And then I still offer them a really good product at an excellent price. So there's enough meat on the bone for them. And I still make a few dollars in the meantime.
Yeah. I've said this a million times. You know, I used to have a plaque on my desk, and I really need to order one again that says, good acquisitions solve all problems.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you're never going to get stuck with property unless you really buy it right.
Right.
So what does it take? I mean, give it, you know, what does it take to get where you are? I mean, tell us your story.
Actually, just a little over 4 years ago, so August 17th of 2011 was my last day at a big box store. I was the installation manager. I've got about 13 years in the audio video business. So I used to do custom homes with the automation and the home theaters and all of that. So I was trying to get out of that business, but when we moved back, a local big box store called me, wanted me to come head up their installation team. So I did, and they offered me something that I couldn't refuse, which ended up being horrible. After 3 months of that, I was just absolutely miserable. And I'd been started doing some of the real estate a little bit. So I made the decision to just completely quit and get into this full time. And the first 6 months was a struggle trying to wholesale and be an agent for buyers. You know, a $20,000 purchase price on a low-end house with a 3% commission that you have to split two or three ways. You know, my first check was like $175. And I looked at that like good grief. That's when I realized, like, well, if these guys are – they'll pay 20 or 25 for this house, and if I can find it for 15 – then I can make a lot more than $175.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. that's kind of, it took me about 6 months of that. And I found some private money in the meantime to help me out. So I actually fund everything now. And that's kind of what got it started. So back in 2012, my first year, I did 28 deals. And then this year it looks like I've got 155 already done, and I've probably got another 30 more coming by the end of the year. So we're going to be just under 200 deals this year.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. There's such a different mentality or attitude toward representing other people and representing yourself.
Yes.
And, you know, Jill and I meet a lot of people in this business, especially since we started Land Academy, and you can almost see it right when you meet them that they're interested in being a private investor, or they're interested in representing other people. And yeah. It sounds like you figured it out really quickly. You know, you want to be an owner.
Right. And, you know, our principal broker at the brokerage, he has me come in about once a quarter to speak to the other 65 retail agents in our office about what I do. And I'm there, you know, I'm telling them what I'm doing to a point and trying to get them to understand. They're all kind of shaking their head, and some's asking some good questions. But then after a week, they're all back to, you know, showing the picket fences to Ken and Barbie again. That's all they know how to do.
Right.
Right. I was going to ask Sean a question. So when you made the transition from W-2, because this is something that comes up with us a lot, and I'm sure you see it in bigger pockets too. Everybody wants to leave their day job yesterday and just dive right in. And we're always telling people, hold on a moment. Let's do this right. So was it scary? Did you have a lot of money saved up? What was your, wife, you know, like, what are we doing? You must be crazy.
No, after we owned a business for about 13 years, our own audio video business. And okay. then we've been entrepreneurs almost our whole married life. So I've only had a few W-2 jobs. Okay. And we've been at the bottom, you know, which is a good experience now looking back, that it really teaches you to be frugal and to save. So to answer your question, yeah, we had some savings. And you know, thank goodness we did, because, you know, that was tough. I actually sold some cars in the meantime. You know, I used to flip mm-hmm. cars a little bit. So I was buying and selling cars off of Craigslist just to make some extra cash. So, but that's just who I am. I can go out and sell anything to anybody if I have to eat. So, you know, I'm not too worried about doing that. Now, if someone is been a lifelong W-2 employee that thinks they can just jump into this, they're going to be in a, for rude awakening, I think. So they have to be, you know, I always recommend, like what you're saying, you know, have some experience where you're consistently getting some income and you got some savings before you actually jump off the edge and quit. Even though the job might suck in your world, or you think it's absolutely horrible, but what's horrible is not having that steady check coming in every week for the first several months.
Mm-hmm. I like it too. Like for me personally, I had to get to the point where, all right, this is stupid now. You know, Steve and I talk about it. I've had W-2 jobs. I was with a major airline for many years, and at the point where I was juggling too many things and I was losing deals and losing money, I'm like, all right, I'm out. This definitely makes way more sense now. So, and that's a really good feeling.
Yes.
So, yeah. Were you going to say something, Stephen?
Well, so take us through that transition then, Sean. You know, you did first couple deals, or we stopped the story where you were an agent, and then take us from there.
Yeah. So when I first got into that, I was working with a company that was kind of a turnkey provider. So they was doing acquisitions, rehab, property management, maintenance, and all that. And I was the acquisition side of that, which is really good experience. Cause for the most part, I had no experience looking at houses. So I was looking at between 40 and 50 per week, taking lots of pictures, doing estimates. That really helped me get an idea of the area, the market, the neighborhoods, and the pricing. And during that time, I actually did a little joint venture flip with the owner. And, you know, we ended up making, I think, $7,000 on a $20,000 investment. And I thought, well, that was neat, you know. So I think this is going to work. So that's when I ended up quitting, because up to that point I was doing it part time with him while still working full time. But when I quit, about 3-4 weeks later, his company went completely this out of control, and the main buyer quit us, and he had all kinds of problems in house. So I was pretty much left out on my own, and that was the 6 months of starving. And trying to be an agent and all of that. And so I found the local two biggest REO brokers in the area and went to pursue them and try to convince them they should hire me. And that's what happened. And that's where I'm still at. So I went, you know, I actually chose the broker that I wanted to work with because they was large REO brokers. And I want to get the inside track on that.
Good. So that actually works. I mean, the REO niche for investors, really, it really does work.
No. Because this was.
I've always wondered if that really is inside.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I put it.
Because I'd been taking some local at the local REIA meetings, and there was a lady there. She was talking about the pocket listings and how you should get in with a good REO broker so you have first crack at some of these deals. So that was my whole idea, and the agenda was to get in. And just about that same time I got in, which was early 2012, the REO banks started wising up, finding out that if they put it on the market first with no offers for the first 7 days, and then all of a sudden they would get more money for these properties versus doing pocket listings. So just as I got in is when pocket listings went out. And so to answer your question, I might get one or two extra deals per year because of where I'm at with the brokerage, but it's not hasn't really helped me like I was hoping it would.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. During the downturn, I went to a lot of banks and purchased. We actually went through with the transactions and purchased properties, land that was improved enough so that banks could lend on it originally. Mm-hmm. And we did a bunch of deals in Florida, and they turned out to be great deals with us. But man, is it a headache to get something done?
Right.
You know, my whole business model, or our business model, is you send an offer in the mail to somebody unsolicited. They either want it or they don't. They sign it. You know, we send a million offers out. Mm-hmm. A bunch of them come back. We take a look at the deal, and then we either choose to do it or not, or maybe we'll renegotiate it. Huh. Man, with a bank, it's like you got to go out chasing deals every day.
Yes.
You know, you got to look through lists and lists and lists. And the person that's on the other end of the phone, and I don't want anyone to take offense at this, but the person that's on the other end of the phone sounds like they're 12. They really don't have a basic understanding of, you know, real estate terminology, mostly the asset disposition departments in large banks, usually that's the place where everybody's hanging their head all day. Mm-hmm. So that's been my experience. I'm glad that you can turn a couple of deals positively, you know.
Yeah, and the only reason I can, because they'll have an REO deal that follows through the week before the end of the month. And the broker calls, says, we're going to lose this listing if we don't sell it by the end of the month. And can you buy it and close in 4 days? And here's the price they'll take. And sometimes I can do that.
Excellent. All right, last question. So for someone starting out, what's the first step? You know, it's very, very scary. We have tons and tons of members.
Yes.
And, you know, what do you think?
I'd say one of the very first things is try to network as much as you can and just rub elbows with people that are doing it. And I think that's what helped me a lot, was going to all the REO meetings I could find, all the meetups, all the little groups. Yes, they're after hours. Yes, you've got family stuff to do. But if you want to really do this, you're going to have to make mm-hmm. the commitment of time to do that. And, you know, 4 years mm-hmm. later, I'm still doing that. I still go to 5 or 6 meetups, you know, per month, and try to have 1 to 3 face-to-face meetings per week, just keeping in touch with everybody. I think that helps a lot. And then, of course, read as much as you can and get all the education you can, and then just go out and do a deal. That's mm-hmm. the biggest holdup is people will look at spreadsheets, they'll read all the forms, they'll listen to all the podcasts, and it's 2 or 3 years later, and they still haven't pulled the trigger, right. And they keep saying one of these days, or waiting for the perfect deal, which there is no perfect deal, just
right,
you know. And so I just tell people here, of course, you can do it with a low end of property. You can buy something that's not horrible for $20,000. And put 10 into it, and then so just go through the process, you know. Mm-hmm. And at worst case, if you lose it all, which you won't, it's still less than a 3-day seminar,
right?
Know? So
that's
so
great advice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we ask our members to deed property to each other, or not to a family member, for whatever reason that the paperwork piece of some of this really trips people up. So deeding it to their husband or wife or whatever seems to help a lot.
Oh, that's a good idea. Just to get something moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Excellent.
Yeah, I like that. Just doing it is probably the scariest thing for a lot of people. They wait for having their desk in order, their business cards there, their stapler, you know, they're all ready to go waiting for the phone to ring. You're like, no, just jump in, you know.
That actually happened to one of the locals about a year and a half ago. He went all out on a website and all this back office stuff and all the, you know, he just spent months and months and hundreds of hours of his time getting all this. Right. And I'm like, how are you going to pay for this?
Exactly. And,
you know, so here he is, you know, 18 months later, all the way back down to ground zero, starting over, just getting out there, getting deals. Then he'll worry about the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I'm feeling a little guilty because, I mean, I don't know. In our world, we don't we don't need to go to a lot of those events. We don't, because our thing is kind of, we're all over the country too. So my buyers and my sellers are all spread out. They're not really local. So I'm just sitting here thinking, Stephen does like AZ88 on a Friday night count as a networking event. Okay. That's my meetup.
That's my time to not think about real estate.
That's true. So,
Sean Holzapfel, it's great to have you on the show. If somebody wants to find super cheap property in the Indianapolis area, how do we find you on the internet?
Well, that's pretty bad that I don't even have a website that I use. So, honestly, since we already talked about Bigger Pockets, just contact me through there if they wanted to. I can give my email if you want that.
If you want 1,000 people to contact you, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open. You know, I help as much as I can. So it's Sean H. That's SHAWNH at Indy, INDY PropertySource.com.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Go make some HUD offers, man. It sounds like that's how you're going to spend your rest of your day.
Absolutely.
Thanks again.
Thanks,
talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first briefly. It's, you know, first of all, I'm a great guy, but you know, I just see a pattern with residential real estate investing, and I'm not knocking it. I just think there's an easy way to do it and a tough way to do it. Sounds like he's got some undervalued. He's figured out his little HUD niche, and that's cool. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's what I made notes.
Well, like, oh, we didn't name the show either. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We didn't name the show, and I figured we'll just do that after this one, too, and that's totally fine. I was kind of laughing. I'm like, did he purposely not bring that up to Nate to title the show? And that's okay. We'll do it after. No, but what's interesting is it just sounds like a slow process. You know, it sounds like he's fighting and doing things. Could you imagine having to send out hundreds of offers a day? I mean, I guess I got to spend 2 hours every day doing this. Like, oh my gosh, that would drive me crazy. And then I heard he said something about being the one mailer he did was he got too busy and there are missed opportunities. I'm like, hold on a moment. What I heard is that worked so darn well. I'm like, why didn't you just, you know, hang with that? But it's not like he tricked the other people to do it. And now he just takes the deals from them, which is kind of what I do.
You know, I think everybody in real estate who's successful finds their little niche for some reason that makes sense to them. And, you know, and they really just kind of kick the heck out of it in a good way. So that HUD thing, I've heard great stuff about that. I've never purchased a HUD house before. I've tried. And I stopped right there because doing a mailer is easier, I think, for our personality or for the way that we run our operation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just a lot of paperwork involved in that. And you know how I feel about paperwork. But.
Oh, yeah.
So my hat's off to him. I think it's great. He found a little niche. The good news is this. He's found a way to buy undervalued real estate, which is why we're all here.
Exactly.
I love getting offers like you, Jill. I think what you're saying is let's just make the offers come to us. Mm-hmm. You know, let's open the mail every day, get a bunch of offers, decide which ones we want.
You know what I do like about Sean? He's not out there driving for dollars and wasting his time with all that stuff.
Well said.
Thank you. So maybe that should be somehow in our title. Congrats, Sean. You're not driving for dollars or something.
So. This is the second guy we've spoken with in that part of the country recently. And it makes me. So they say you can buy a house for whatever. He as low as 18, he mentioned, and as high as 60 or 70,000. Makes me think like maybe you could buy like for personal use a cool piece of like farm type property, like picture it on a postcard. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, 20 or 30 acres somewhere in the southern central Indiana or something. I don't know. And just use it once in a while. Maybe just pay the taxes on it. Use it a few times a year and then sell it in 20 years. I don't know.
You're getting emotional there and you're not thinking financially.
Oh, I haven't finished.
Every time you talk about the view, I have to worry about you.
Put like an apartment building on the corner or something. I don't know. No, you're exactly right, Jill. What am I talking about?
I know. Here we go again. Isn't this pretty? We should have this. What are you talking about?
I was on the way to dropping my kid off at school today, and it's all leftover rainy. Mm-hmm. And so there's all this like settling, foggy, cool thing on the golf course that we drove by. So I pulled the car over and I took a bunch of cool pictures. I hope they come out. You know, all I had was my camera phone. So then it just got me thinking about there's so much cool real estate and what it looks like. And, you know, now I'm just all misty-eyed about real estate today.
Oh, here we go again. Just kidding.
You should never be misty-eyed about real estate. You should just have numbers in your, like dollar signs in your eyes like a cartoon character.
What is so funny is it's so not, if you wouldn't, you would think I'm the one that would be emotional about it, but it's you. It's so funny.
I love real estate. I love dirt.
I've totally changed. I'm all about the bank statement. That's what I get misty-eyed.
Hey, speaking of that, let's go buy some real estate.
Deal.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480-467-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
LandAcademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.